Today's episode of J-Rod Concerts, the podcast, is brought to you by HelloFresh. Summer is right around the corner, and HelloFresh can help take the stress out of eating healthy and having that great beach body by delivering everything you need to cook up tasty meals right to your door, saving you tons of time. We know that summer can be hectic. You're traveling with your family. We're making plans to cover music festivals. You know, concert season is pretty much every other day. There's a lot of crazy stuff happening. And that's where HelloFresh's 15-minute meals come in. Those quick fixes help you get wholesome meal on the table in less than it takes to get delivery. So what is HelloFresh? With HelloFresh, you get farm fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. Go to HelloFresh.com/JRodConcertsFree and use code JRodConcertsFree for free breakfast for life. One breakfast item per box while subscription is active. That's free breakfast for life at HelloFresh.com/JRodConcertsFree with code JRodConcertsFree.
A musical adventure, new artists, new musicians, and everyone involved in the world of music. Live from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee, this is J-Rod Concerts, the podcast, with your host, Jamie Rodriguez. Let's find out what we have this episode.
We are family, J-Rod Concerts family and me. And you are family because we're so grateful when you guys listen to us, J-Rod Concerts Nation. Thank you for your time. Wherever you're listening to, working out, driving, cleaning the house, we appreciate your time. We appreciate your support. Welcome to a new episode. This is, of course, J-Rod Concerts, the podcast, and I am your host, Jamie Rodriguez, this in every episode. And we're so thrilled with today's guest, ladies and gentlemen. She's been called Nashville's Americana Queen. She's been heralded by Rolling Stone, No Depression, and NPR Music, which, by the way, named her 2019 album Violets and Camouflage as one of the year's best. She's been compared to Patsy Cline, of all people. I mean, she is incredible. She's from Swainsboro, Georgia. She is incredible. We first connected with her a few years ago at the 30A Songwriters Festival in Florida. And she is one of those people that just light up the room, light up your spirit, light up your soul, ladies and gentlemen. Mary Bragg, what a person, what a talent, what an artist. And she just released a beautiful new EP, Tie Me to You, including great new singles like The Only Heart I Have and Together Alone, which she performs at the end of this episode. But yeah, we had her live here in the studio, and it was an incredible talk. We talk a lot about the album itself. We talk about magic on the studio. She's got a great, incredible story. She was married to a man. She came out to her parents. She divorced the man. Now she's engaged to a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful woman. I mean, Mary Bragg, she just shines light on everybody. She's got an incredible story, and she shares it with us here. She has a robust year ahead, so make sure you stay up to date with Mary Bragg and all her beautiful adventures, because she is incredible. Her website is marybraggwith2gs.com. And let's get on with it. On J-Rod Concerts, the podcast, this is Mary Bragg. Miss Mary Bragg.
Good morning. Look at you. Hello.
Oh my God, tie me to you. I'm like, I've been listening to it nonstop.
Really?
So good.
Thank you.
Like, so good.
Thank you so much.
But there's just such joy in this EP.
Thank you so much. I really wanted to go for joy this time and sort of like releasing myself from the feeling of needing to be anything but happy, you know, when there's so much in the world that is important to be acknowledged on the heavier, deeper side.
Yeah.
We've all spent a lot of time on those planes. And for this, I just, you know, it's a little nugget of an EP with just three songs and wanted to make it as light as possible.
light.
But for a change.
But also, like, you know, with their trademark, incredible 360 song, right?
Thank you.
And it's not like, you know, when Alanis went happy.
Like when Alanis Morissette started writing happy.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's not the case with you. It's like Happy Mary Brack is good. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I do feel actually quite happy in my life right now. Yeah.
But DCP, I mean, and I'm not tooting your horn. I mean, it is just like the whole three songs. It's amazing. And when I was kind of researching, the fact that you recorded it at Power Station in 1 8-hour session.
Yes, I did.
Like, that's wild. Like, talk a little bit about that day.
Well, did you say what was good about that day?
Yeah, walk me.
Walk you through the day. Well, Power Station is incredible and has, you know, all the gear you can possibly imagine. And there's such history in those rooms there that you sort of walk in with a feeling of overwhelm and expectation, but also, like, thankfully, yeah, it's also where I went to grad school, so I've spent a lot of time in those rooms, actually. Walking in with expectation, but also sort of releasing yourself from it and just remembering that, like, we're here to play music and we're here to, like, record a few songs. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
So I just brought in, like, my favorite old players from when I lived there in my 20s. Rich Hinman, Mike Cassidy, and a couple of people that I had played with a little bit less frequently over the years, but were also excellent additions to the session. Rob Heath and I'm blanking. We're going to have to cut this part. Richard Hammond on bass, who's marvelous. So just like walking in, I was also producing the session, so there was a fair amount of focus for me on the players and getting the songs from their sort of production palette to the place that I wanted for them to be. Actually only got a little bit of initial scratch vocals. I sort of do that when I produce my own sessions. I'll get the band settled. We'll find the program. The program is sort of what I like to refer to as the general sonic approach to where we're gonna get. Like, the chart is written out, you've made your changes, you've explored some dynamic opportunities, and then once you have the program, you know, you get a few takes, and for me, I just get a couple scratch vocals and then actually come out of the vocal booth and sit there and continue to produce as we move forward. But yeah, it's just a dream to be playing with Rich and Mike, especially, who I've known since I was 25. You know, we were all teeny boppers in New York City trying to make our way as players and writers. And it was sort of a homecoming for me in a way, which was just, again, joyful to be in that room. And then I brought the sessions back to Nashville, just like literally on my laptop, and keep editing and get the sessions to a place where I was ready to release them into the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm always fascinated when, like, magic like that happens. Mm-hmm. It seems like there was magic that day.
When
you did that EP. Is that, like, the most exciting thing for an artist? Like, when everything kind of just clicks and it just kind of flows?
Right. And you just find it. You know, I mean, instantly is generous. This was, on the one hand, sure, it was just an 8-hour session, but I mean, for me, I think the instantaneous feeling of having arrived at something is actually a culmination of years of hard work.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of practice. And also in this case, you know, I spent many hours writing those songs with Peter Groenewald on Together Alone, Bill Domain.
With Liv Green
on The Only Heart I Have, and with Bill Domain on Only So Much You Can Do. So those sessions, you know, cumulatively probably were, you know, between 12 and 18 hours, maybe even 24. I can't remember how many rewrites we did on, but I think mostly those are probably either one or two session writes. But, you know, with folks that I'm very close friends with, we like to take our time and really get the lyrics right. So there's a lot of, you know, pre-production that goes into it. And then when you get in the studio, it's just about, like, delivering the song as best as you possibly can. And inviting the magic, hope it arrives, And when it does arrive, hopefully we're all like in a good space enough to recognize that it's occurring and we're not like making it about ourselves or anything. I really like to sort of get out of the way of the music as much as possible. So if I'm paying too close attention to like my own relationship to the magic, I try to remember that ultimately, like, giving the song to the recorded universe is like, I really try to give it to the people that are listening to it. And for me, that means like putting myself aside.
Sure.
As we're moving along.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
And, you know, you mentioned that you've been producing, now you're a producer. You know, you worked on Helena's album as well.
Mm-hmm. Helena Hallberg, yeah.
I mean, you're an incredible producer.
Thank you.
How has that been for you? I mean, like, has that been an interesting challenge?
You know, it's also been joyful. It has definitely been a huge chapter of growth in my life as a producer and engineer. During the pandemic, a lot of people had some pivots. And for me, I've just pivoted toward learning more and really ramping up my skills as a producer. I had started to produce a few years prior, actually just 2 or 3 years prior to the pandemic, trying to get the timing right. But when the pandemic happened, I got served a really well-targeted ad on Instagram for singers and songwriters and producers. It was like, are you a producer who wants to take your career to the next level? And I was like, well, as a matter of fact, I do. So, yeah. Are you from Swainsboro, Georgia? What did you say? Yeah, so it was Berklee College of Music, and so I went for it and moved back to New York from Nashville. I've been living in Nashville from 2013, and then during the pandemic, I was like, well, let's a year and a half. Yeah,
how was that?
It was awesome. Awesome to be back. It's definitely a very different city now. Sure. But it's still like the same great New York that like I certainly know and still love very much. Yeah. But you know, production is just like an extension of caring a lot about songs for me. It's just like another opportunity to serve a song. I love to serve the song as a singer, as a writer, and now as a producer, engineer too. But like, I feel like producing for me is something that, is more focused on the song first approach than the engineering first approach, because I feel like people who have spent their lives as engineers are the engineers. I'm a person who also engineers,
sure.
Both at home, and sometimes I assist on stuff in the studio, but mostly my work as a producer is like getting the song itself to where it needs to be and then making sure that the incredible arena of sound that supports the melody and lyric is going to get to the point where it needs to be before we say it's done.
When you see someone that you're going to produce, like that first meeting,
mm-hmm.
you know, how, that's different from when you're like first sitting with someone like as a co-write, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you ask like Helena or whoever you work with now, like what's Mary the producer, like what's the conversation like?
It starts a lot with what kind of record you want to make. Mm. What kind of experience do you want to have? Mm. Some people just want to, you know, be quick and dirty about it and get the record done and put it out into the world. And other people want to have a sort of slow, fantastic experience in the studio that's sort of, you know, charismatic and patient as opposed to, you know, professional and budget friendly. So it starts with what kind of record you want to make, what kind of experience you want to have, but also I can't really have any conversation with an artist until I hear the songs, because the songs to me drive everything, you know. And sometimes I, you know, go deep with writers and artists on their work and help them get the songs to the point where they're ready to go into the studio. And other times the songs are already like utter fire.
Yeah.
And I don't have to touch a thing. I just have to, you know, focus on the production itself instead of all the other stuff that goes along with pre-production.
Yeah. I, you know, I've been thinking about that and the way that you kind of like enveloped feelings, like open them, not only in your songs, but in the ones you work with.
Mm.
And I kind of can't help but connect that to your journalism background.
Whoa, you've done your homework. Yeah. Oh my God.
Right? Like it sounds to me like, yeah, like as a producer, as a co-writer, I mean, whenever we talk off camera, like you ask the very right questions.
Mm, this is a good Monday. You're like really making me feel good.
Yeah, right?
Well, yeah, I think that's interesting because in undergrad, I started as a classical voice major, but when I was really like such a naive, sweet little child, and I didn't really know what that meant. I didn't know what it meant to go off and study opera. I didn't know that I was in an opera program at Georgia, the University of Georgia. And so about a year and a half into the program, my professor, my main vocal coach was like, you know, you should really, instead of playing these gigs at night and writing songs on your guitar, like you should really focus on, you know, your classical training so you can go off and go to the Met, you know, the Metropolitan Opera. And I was like, what do you mean? Then I want to be an opera singer. So thankfully she supported my shift. And that's when I learned about the route of journalism as it pertains to writing. So for me, I just found journalism to be another opportunity to excavate and learn and ask questions. So who, what, when, where, why, and why should I care? And that's a thing that I say a lot to writers that I'm in the work with about actual lyrics, because it's not just who, what, when, where, and why in journalism, right? In songs, it also unfortunately includes the why should I care, because when other people come into play, when they are, you know, they've got you in their AirPods and they're, you know, incredible speakers in their home or their car or at their party or whatever, there is an element of wanting to include that listener. And that to me is the why should I care. So it's brittle to put it that way, but it's like a reality of what we do. Anyway, yeah, I think journalism is hugely important, and I really would love to see more people in this world care more about journalism, also in the music journalism portion of it, but especially, you know, the brass tacks of news. Thank you.
Yes. For stuff.
Thank you.
And you're like, oh my God, like, where's Mary Brandt's book? When is it coming out? Like,
oh my gosh.
It's. But Mary, I love it. I mean, and obviously it's becoming clear for my audience that they didn't know you, how much love you have. I mean, it's clear, and you're such a bundle of love and joy. And you mentioned you grew up in Georgia.
I did.
Small town. It sounds to me like you had a really happy childhood.
I did.
I'm a very loving family, right?
A super loving family. And lots of it. Like, you know, even just the other day, someone was asking me, like, who my best friends were growing up and had I kept in touch with them. And I was like, well, my best friends were my family. I had 18 first cousins on one side of my family, and most of those people were in my town. Like, not just in my town, but, like, 1 mile from my home. Like, it was a very, like, you know, I don't even know how to describe it unless you were raised in a huge family where you were constantly around each other. I don't know that anyone could ever understand that. Yeah. It's just a very specific thing. So there was a lot of love flying around and a lot of music flying around. And, you know, I don't know what your next question is, but we've definitely had a hard chapter as I've come out that to, you know, redefine what love is for our family, because a lot of folks in my family are, you know, very religious and have a certain feeling about what romantic love should look like.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not redefining, I don't think, what love in our family is, but to me, it's just been a reestablishing of the definition of love, because love should be unconditional, right? And whether you disagree with someone's orientation and who they love or not, you should, to me, extend love and kindness to that person, especially if they're in your actual family of origin.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you brought the topic forward, but, you know, when that whole thing happened with your divorce and all that, and you kind of like expressed it to your family, Was that, you know, was that liberating? Was that hard?
Not at first. It was awful at first. Because I mean, I at the very beginning, I thought it was, the first conversation was liberating because I said it out loud to them. I had been wanting to tell my parents for a long time. I'm bi, so I'd known about that in myself for 15, I don't even know what year it is right now, honestly. But I had known that about myself for quite some time.
Sure.
And had shared that with a few people. But I was married to a man, and I loved him. And so I didn't really feel a need necessarily to tell my parents about it. So at first it was liberating, but then extremely painful for me and for them and for many people in my family. So the sort of healing process has been long. But really also, my parents refer to it as miraculous that they came around to meeting my partner and now fiance, and they love her and they treat her with an incredible amount of kindness. And, you know, they also still feel the way they feel about what romantic love should be. So there are still things that we have to respect about each other's views in the world and about, a person's place in the world. But it has been like since that moment of evolution, which was just before Thanksgiving of 22, not that long ago, 21, it was 2021. Yeah, because we came down from New York. I was in grad school at the time, and they invited my fiance and me to Thanksgiving. Sure. So we came down, and it was a big moment, but also continuously painful for the people that have not come around.
Right.
And there are many of those, and it's really, really awful. Yeah.
But in a way, it's also been like inspiring to see you kind of just like, it's almost an example, you know, that, you know, it's true to the values that matter, which is connection to yourself.
Yeah, and knowing that even though some people think that I'm a threat, and I've been told that by many people, people think that I'm a threat. People think that our relationship is a threat to, you know, their families and their morals and whatnot. Like, I know that that is not true. I know that the love that I have for a person who happens to be of the same gender as me, I know that that is not a threat. Like, love is love is love, and love is like, anyway, it's a hard thing, but I do know that I feel grounded in myself and my partnership.
Yeah.
And moving through that, you know, like with my last record, there was a lot about that, with my song Love Each Other, which is like, it's about like, come on guys, can't we talk about something else?
Yeah.
Can't we just, like, you know, sit around the table and have casserole again? And
sure.
And remember too that to me, there's so much about this divisiveness that is self-important, and I really don't like it. I don't like being the center of this conversation because it makes it about me. And like I said before, I've really tried to like get out of the way of whatever the message is. And in this case, it's been, you know, imperative that I was part of the message because it was my story. But yeah, I mean, sure, I'll set an example.
Yeah.
I'll be an example because, like, look at me. I don't go around and get discriminated against because I look a certain way. There are people who have a much more difficult experience in this topic than I do. So, like, my story is like the slightest. I'm not trying to minimize my pain, Brené, comparative suffering, anybody. But I do think that, like, I know that my story has not been as painful as many other people's story, whether it's about sexuality or many of the other difficult arenas of discrimination and judgment, you name it. I mean, racism. racism to me is the obvious, much larger
systematic
that I, as a cis presenting white woman, will never understand. I can try. I can try to advocate, and I do advocate and do my best, but also I will never fully understand. You know. You too, Jaime.
Let me leave you with this, because
sure,
pivoting a little bit, I briefly mentioned that you're also a great writer and you did some op-eds. And I remember once last year, I think it was last year, after the John Prine show, a week at the Reitman, you wrote a great opinion piece here in a local paper about, you know, how artists are supposed to like wear so many hats nowadays. Not only what we've been talking about, producing, making the damn song, making them feel people, what do I want people to feel, but also like market them, you know, social media, that whole thing.
Yeah.
It's been a year since that, pretty much, or like 9 months, I don't even know. But I sense some people have had a shift, some haven't. You know, TikTok may get shut down. Like, a lot is happening.
Right.
I feel like there's a lot of things. Where do you stand with that now? Have you found like a nice balance with that? Have you found a more like way of being creative without hurting? Like, where do you stand with that?
Have I found a more creative way?
Or is it like worse, you know?
I think it in some ways, because social media is just so a part of the fabric of the modern world right now, there's really not a lot of getting away from it as an artist. But I still stand by what I said before, which is that art should come first always. And everybody can have their own personal personas on social media and have an extension of themselves be a representation of the work. But I still purport that those extensions of ourselves should be driven by the art that we're trying to put in the world and not have it be flipped. Not have some social media campaign be the, or marketing campaign that includes social media. Like, those things should not be the thing that matters, because to me, the work is the work. And the work is why the music is powerful. Like, when we put the time in and make a song and a performance of that song that we have put dozens of hours, hundreds of hours in, thousands of hours of practice in over the years, that's when the social media part is like, sure, okay, I can get on and do some selfie videos and do whatever. But I'm not opposed to social media. I just think that, like, we've gotten it wrong in so many ways.
Yeah. And thank you, Mary, because I mean, you are doing it right, because your song,
I mean,
whenever I see you live, and also like when I repeated listens, there's always something new. Like, you definitely hit the feelings in a very profound way.
Thanks.
And that is going to outlive us all. What you?
It is, alas, our songs themselves are not only going to outlive us, but also outlive our social media campaigns.
Exactly.
Lest we forget, y'all, Instagram is going to die someday. I mean, sorry, Meta. Sorry, Meta. But, like, you know, in 100 years, the master recordings, the publishing, that will still be the thing that will be carried to whatever the new iteration of software is. You know, like, we can't be beholden to the software companies.
You mean no one in our funeral, in our epitaph, is going to say, remember when Mary got a viral video in August?
God. Remember that one time she did this? No. No, y'all. No. You're the best. Thank you so much for having me today. Hey, y'all. This is Together Alone.
Out here, so clear. Up there in a sky so breezy, palms swing, birds sing, low tide we're breathing easy. Do do do. I wanna go do do do. Someplace that we don't know do do do. Wherever we go, do do do. making out in the bluish water, get lost, drift off, dipping when the sun gets hotter. Do do do.
You have been listening to J-Rod Concerts, the podcast. Thank you for tuning in.